This is the Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration from JP Lab Productions and Oddball Magazine.
Hey everybody, it's Jason from the Oddball Show. I'm here with Rich Mackin I've known him through a book called Dear Mr. Mackin, and right now we are currently talking, and he is currently organizing his bookshelf, and we were talking about his books. So, Rich, what books you got going on over there?
I have a gigantic pile of most of my books, I think, are about Buddhism. I have a disproportionately high amount of, like, large amount of books about pirates and Santa. So one of the things that happen is it's people, you know, often will, like, look at your bookshelf and, like, oh, you've read all these books? And I own probably 10 times more books than I've actually read because two summers ago, so like a year and a half ago, I won this thing where if you visited, I don't think it was every independent bookstore in Connecticut, but like, you know, like a vast majority, and you got like a little passport stamp, you won a prize where you won a gift certificate at each independent bookstore. And a lot of these are used bookstores where like the most expensive book is like $4 or $5. So, like, I think it was, like, $50 at each store. So you can imagine, like, you know, like, if every book's $4, you could get a lot of books for $50. And then, of course, what happens is you go and you shop with abandon. So you still, like, you know, you get your $50 worth, and then you still, like, get two or three on top of that. But also libraries exist. So I'm perpetually like, oh, I bought all these books, and I read one, and then that suggests some other books. So then I wind up going to the library and getting like the three books that the book I just read suggested. And, you know, like, okay, well, now I've read five books and I haven't gotten any closer to like going through this epic used book collection I accumulated.
You know, it's really interesting, Rich. I love used bookstores, and I was driving. I went to Winding Skill in New York. And I don't know if you know where that is. But it's in New York, and I was driving on the way back with my mom, and I found this place called Braveheart Books, super awesome bookstore, and I bought like a bunch of really great books there. It was inside; it was like someone's house that they created into a bookstore. It was so cool, man! Like those kind of bookstores are the best. It reminded me of like the Upstairs was like it was like the coolest bookstore I've ever seen. I've been trying to get the person on my podcast, but it was so great to have to go and you know, right now all the, you know, books are, you know, used bookstores are where it's at, right? You know, and so you were in Connecticut and you saw and what was this like? How were you getting these used books certificates?
A couple of the used bookstore are a couple of the independent bookstores are you know, completely just a normal business. They sell the books new, cover price, and but a lot of them are weird, kind of like you're saying, like, you know, someone's house that kind of got overgrown. And one of the more commercial ones came up with this idea of doing a used bookstore like passport program or something.
For books.
Yeah. And if I understand it correctly, there is a miscommunication over the idea of it. So what happened is the quote-unquote contest or whatever was that you had a weekend to visit like 15 out of 18 independent bookstores in the state of Connecticut. And while Connecticut is one of the smallest states, I think it's the second smallest state, that's still like a lot of space to cover, you know, within 2 days, and especially like Sunday, a lot of the, you know, like places were like only open from like 12 to 6. So on one level, you had all these people going from bookstore to bookstore, but instead of shopping, they were in a big rush to like get their passport stamped and then move on. And then what happened is there's like miscommunication where I think they thought, I think the bookstores thought that one person was going to win $50 per bookstore, but instead it was like everyone who completed it. So there was like, like a couple dozen of us.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it was kind of like a weird, bizarre kind of situation, but it did lead me to having all of these, having all these used books. But then once you won, you had, whatever time to do it. And that was just really great because I was just able to like, I grew up in Connecticut, but I hadn't been here for, like 30 years really. And close to, 25, 30 years. And I was able to like go exploring and it's like, oh, there's a lot of great stuff here. And there's like so many really cool brew pubs and there's a lot more interesting hikes than I thought. So I had a lot of weekends where I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go to this part of Connecticut and I'm going to go to two bookstores and two brew pubs and go on a hike and, and got to know my home state a lot better.
Nice. Yeah. Like back in the day they had, well, they still do. They still have tours of a brewery where you can do like kind of like that bookstore idea. But I love that idea of like Boston doing like a bookstore thing. Like you were just talking about bookstore passport bookstore thing. That's such a great idea because all these like really great underground bookstores and really need to get together, especially like right now, which if you haven't tuned in right now, it is weird times for me and Rich right now talking. There's been this major COVID-19 kind of thing going on and it's pretty insane. And really, like bookstores and little music stores and stuff are really being affected by it, and they really need to stick together at this point, especially in Boston. So, like these little small bookstores, like that we're talking about, like they're the ones that really need to get, they're the ones that need support right now. I'm not saying not everyone else needs support, but like we're all hurting, but they kind of need support, But when you were in Connecticut, you found a bunch of bookstores, but Let's go back. So you said you hadn't gone there in like 30 years, right?
Yes.
So let's go back. You are on my show because you are Rich Mackin. And I remember you from 2002. Rich, a little bit about me. I was going through some shit in 2002, maybe 2001, 2000. I was newly diagnosed with a manic depression. And ended up gravitating towards another diagnosis, but I don't really believe in diagnoses these days anyway. But I had a few friends. One of them, his name was Conrad. Conrad, shout out to you, Conrad. And another good friend, Andrew Bourne. These two were my best friends when I was living in Salem, Massachusetts. And Conrad showed me a copy of Dear Mr. Mackin. I had never seen it before, and I read it, and it was hilarious.
Yay
for you. So I'll kind of tell the listeners what it is about, and then I'm sure you said that a bunch of times what it's about. So let me try and tell the listeners what Dear Mr. Mackin's about. So Rich had an idea, and maybe you can talk a little more about this, Rich, that to write to corporations about their taglines, their logos, their slogans, and like just point out little things about them that were really, really funny, like M&M's and Lever 2000 and Canes and Hellman's and Sprite and was it IBM? So many. So there was some really cool stuff there. So one of them, and I'll let Rich talk this through in a minute, but Lever 2000, the slogan was there are two, we clean
all your body's 2000 parts.
Yeah, right. So Rich kept on writing like, dear sir, I've counted all the parts in my body and they do not equal 2000. And he's like, I've actually counted. There's 119 parts of my. So you should probably say there's 119, cleaning all 119 parts of your body,
and then they just keep on.
Yeah, yeah. And they would keep on sending you back the same letter. So, dude, so let's talk about that. Why did you do that?
Well,
what gave you the idea to start bothering corporations?
Well, the original idea is like we have to go back to the before time. I won't say before the internet, but long before the internet was what we know is now. You know, so like if you had internet, you were like at MIT. You know, so this was even before everyone had email, you know, before smartphones. And so like you communicated people by actually like typing up a letter or writing a letter and putting it in an envelope and mailing it to people. And I was just like, you know, like I was like, this kind of goes into my politics too. It's like, if you're going to ask something, ask the person who can actually answer. And if you're going to complain about something, complain to the person who can actually address it. So like, instead of just idly wondering, you know, while eating pizza and drinking beer, like, oh, I wonder why, you know, why is this, why is that? You know, so it started out with just like, why are they called M&Ms? Like, what kind of name? You know, it was just like some friends of mine. We were like talking about like, why do products have such weird random names? And we were like, so like, why are they called M&Ms? Like, what do the letters M&M have to do with candy? And so I wrote to the M&M company, and they said that the two M's stood for the founders of the corporation. And one of them was Forrest Mars, who's the same guy who the Mars bar is named after. So it's not named after the planet. It's named after a co-founder of the company. And the other was named after another former founder who's no longer involved with the company, and they don't wish to speak about him. And I thought that was like, not only did they answer my question, but they also opened up so much more. And I'm just like, wow, that was like, and I can just imagine, like, you know, like if you wrote to say the Disney company, I'm like, why are you called Disney? Oh, well, we are named after Walt Disney, founder of the company. It's like, oh, okay, well, I'm done. But asking this, you know, like getting this weird response, I'm like, wow, what's going on? And then I was also just amused, you know, that they wrote back and that they actually addressed what I had to say. So I started doing that just kind of to amuse myself and like just some of my friends. And then a friend of mine gave me a copy of the Laszlo Letters, by the same, it was the same comedian who did Father Guido Sarducci in the classic Saturday Night Live seasons. And so he also wrote to corporations, although he was more of a just general kind of goofball joker type. And so what happened is, like, on one level, I realized, like, you know, at first I was disappointed because I realized, like, oh, I'm not that innovative and novel. But then I also realized, like, oh, wait, but this means that there's, like, a precedent that there's something that this could work on. And I kind of, like, oh, if, you know, like, if he's the Black Sabbath of this genre, I could be the Slayer of this genre or the Dead Kennedys of this genre. So I figured I would take it to see how weird I could get. And one of the things, like, I've always kind of been a political activist type. But rather than kind of being to a lot of companies like, you know, like you're a bad company because you do these immoral things or you pollute or you switch up labor, a lot of what I would do is just at, like, you know, kind of like ask weird, cryptic, secondary or innocent questions just to see what they would say. And one of the Todd of Gorski Press, who wound up publishing the book, he was saying that, like, in a way, it's like, you know, most people see capitalism and advertising and everything as this horrible, horrible, horrible thing, and they're unhappy about it, and so they wear, you know, like, you know, they fight it, versus I was kind of, like, finding a way to play with it. So instead of just saying, like, you're bad, it's like, oh, well, what could I do? Do I amuse myself and amuse others about it? And his comparison was, it's kind of like when you see a toddler splashing in a rain puddle when everyone else is trying to get dry. It's like, oh, this kid knows. They're like, this kid doesn't care that it's raining. This kid's like, oh, it's raining? Okay, I'll play in what the rain is. And that was very, very sweet compliment.
And so just, you know, kind of took off, and it was one of those kind of became self-perpetuating where it's like a friend of mine suggested I take my letters to a open mic poetry reading and read them as if they were poetry, and I did that. And then that went well, and so they asked me to come back and do that more. And then while I was there, people were saying, like, oh, you should publish books that of all these letters. So I started doing that. And what happened, like, how I wound up with a book, and this is such a funny thing now because people ask me, like, oh, how do you get a published book? In my case, it was Todd from the old zine Razor Cake and Sean Carswell both wanted to publish books of their own, and they were having a hard time finding publishers. So they teamed up, and they each published their own books, and they published one of their girlfriend's books, and they published like a compilation of things by a bunch of their friends. And then they're like, well, geez, now we have a book company. What do we do now? And they thought, well, I wonder if Rich Mackin would be interested in taking a whole bunch of his zines and, you know, like maybe doing a compilation of it. And they called me up, you know, closer to 2000, and they called me up and just saying, you know, like, hey, have you ever thought about publishing a book? And I'm like, yeah, you know, like I had met them and like we were on good terms, but we didn't know each other that well. And they're like, hey, have you ever thought about compiling a bunch of your zines and doing a book? And I said, yeah. And they said, whoa, would you like us to do it? I said, yeah. And there was silence. And I asked Sean, is something wrong? He goes, oh, no, I had a whole like sales pitch in mind. I didn't realize you were just going to say yeah. And I'm like, well, you could still give me a sales pitch if you want. But, you know, like, and I just, you know, so it kind of, you know, just fell in my lap. It was a really great fortuitous thing. Yeah, and it's funny because it's like there's a big thing where I hear a lot of writers like talk about like the difference between like published versus self-published. So it's like in a way it's like it was two guys who were about my age who lived in an apartment together and had loft beds so that they could store all the boxes of books underneath their beds. But it was still like somebody who wasn't me was public, you know, paying for my book to be printed. So that was very, you know, flattering and delightful. But a lot of this was very much a product of its time, where it's like I've tried to get back into it, and it's like these days if I do something and I, you know, like you don't really write letters anymore. A lot of companies don't even show what their physical address is anymore. They just want you to fill out a thing on their website. But I find that like if I ask this sort of snarky question, like. And I post it on something. People are like, I don't understand. Why don't you just look that up? Why don't you just Google it? And like, well, the point is like, sometimes it's, I don't want to, you know, like with Lever 2000, it's like, I don't want to know the answer. I want to hear what the company will provide with the answer. The best is when I wrote to General Electric and their slogan was GE, we bring good things to life. And so I'm just like, yeah, but like, that's simple. But like, think about it. Like, what are these things that you're bringing to life and what qualifies them as good in this, you know, topsy turvy, morally ambiguous world? And the metaphor I came up with, like when you think of a time that somebody brought something to life using electricity, it's the story of Frankenstein. And that didn't go so well for him. And somebody from GE wrote me back, and this is like very early in my writing career. Somebody wrote me back and said, thank you for taking some time out of what must be a hectic schedule. And I just thought that like, okay, that's brilliant, because like if I'm the crackpot I come across as, I would be flattered. But since I'm the smartass that I actually am, I'm like, aha, you're playing with me too. And it's like, and every now and then I would get that, you know, like Peggy Lawton cookies. I wrote them, and that was like, oh, it was a weird story about sharing Peggy Lawton cookies with like the other guy with a mohawk on a train. Back when like mohawks were like a lot more of like an unusual thing, and I made a friend by sharing cookies with the other guy with a spiky mohawk on a train, and I shared Peggy Lawton, you know, sent Peggy Lawton a letter, and their response was something like, you know, like, it was a hot, oppressive day at the bakery. Then we got your letter. It was like cool breezes came to refresh us.
And it's just like, you know, like things like that. It's like, all right, I made that guy's day and he made my day. And it's just, you know, it's really funny, you know, but it's like, I don't know how well that would go. Like, I see people like do things where, you know, like they bother companies online, you know, using social media or something, and they do screenshots, and there's something to be said for that. But I don't know like how well it can really work. You know, like the specific way I did it definitely was like that time and that time alone.
Oh yeah, dude, you were taking on corporations. Like, this wouldn't work right now. Like, I mean, it would, I guess, but you would be like, you know, asking like tech companies what, and they'd be like, well, this is why we're doing it, because we started in 1972. This is how we started in 1972, because you can look at our mission statement on the line.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, it's like,
yes, oh, yeah, and here's the link.
You know, right, here's the link. Oh, okay, so that's why it's Lever 2000. By the way, Lever 2000, I don't think that exists anymore.
Well, it does, yeah. It was actually funny, and a completely unrelated thing. I was in New York City right before the pandemic kind of got to the craziness that it's at. I was in the New York City area, and I stayed with a friend of mine who just lives over in New Jersey. And it's always so much easier to, like, if you can, go to New Jersey and, you know, like, park, or if you have a friend to stay with, and then go into Manhattan, then try and drive into Manhattan. And I was driving by, and I actually drove by the Unilever headquarters. I'm like, can I pop in? Would anyone remember? But so what happened with the Lever is, so yeah, they had this campaign, you know, their ad campaign was for all your body's 2,000 parts. And so my first thing was just like, you know, like, which 2,000 parts? Is there a list of them? As far as I can see, it only cleans the skin, which is one part. And they sent me back this incredibly, like, pointless form letter that, you know, like we got your letter. Like, thank you for writing us. The fact that you wrote a letter means our ads are good. You know, it's more corporate speak than that, but that was basically it. And so I wrote them back. I'm like, well, thanks for writing me, but you didn't say anything that actually answered my question. And they wrote me back the same letter, except this, the fact that you wrote us again indicates that our ads achieve their desired effect. And so I kept writing them in different iterations, and I got to the point where just, like, if I had a funny idea, you know, because, like, by now, like, I have zines and I have an act and everything, but they're all based on this one thing. So if I had something that's like, oh, this is really funny, but it doesn't have to do with any product to write, I would just write to Lever 2000. So I would go on, like, a essay about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers or about Smurfs or whatever like that. And they would always send me back the same form letter. And finally, I asked them all of the questions in the, or everything that the form letter said, I rewrote in question form. So that way, when I got the form letter back, it actually would answer all of my questions, because I previously did that. And that's when they stopped writing back. And one of the funny things is, so Vermin Supreme, who is now quite the celebrity, dude who is constant running for president, and for people who are like, if you're listening and that sounds familiar, that's the guy who has a boot on his head and is trying to establish a pony-based economy. So
it wouldn't be too bad of an idea at this point.
I mean, yeah, seriously, yeah. And so he and I were friends, and was it actually? I mean, he lives quite a bit outside of Boston. He literally lives in a cabin on a mountaintop. But it's kind of, it's his house is amazing. It's like, think of what would happen if you did halfway Santa's Workshop and halfway the house from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and that's kind of where Vermin Supreme lives. Yeah. But Vermin, I went to a party at Vermin's house, and he was telling me about how a friend of his had a copy of my book, and her mom worked at Unilever, you know, so the parent company. Oh, wow. So she gave her mom a copy of Dear Mr. Mackin, and her mom brought it into the office. And so they were sharing it, and, you know, like, everyone, you know, like, in the cubicles were laughing and everything. And then, like, after lunch, some people in suits came by. And the exact phrasing I remember this was, they brought me to a room I had never been to before, and I hope to never go to again.
and they confiscated the book and they put it in what she said was a very sizable folder.
What?
Yeah. So apparently Unilever has a folder on me.
Oh my God. Oh, that's so funny. Wow. Oh my God. So they confiscate, like the Men in Black came.
Yes.
And like took the book from everyone who was laughing at it.
Yes.
Put it in a discreet file in Lever 2000s because you had a file.
With yeah.
Fantastic. That is one way to piss someone off. Oh my God. What a great way to. But the funny thing is, everyone was like thinking it's hilarious too. You know, like everyone, you know, before the Men in Black came and like, brought, you know, oh wow, that's crazy.
And one of the funny things about this, in hindsight, is when you know, so like the other thing, like what have I been up to since? It's like I've kind of fallen out of writing and whatnot, but I got very involved in Zen Buddhism.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I lived at Dharma Rain Zen Center, which is a Buddhist temple in Portland, Oregon. I actually lived there for 4 years, and I've been heavily involved for most of the 14 years I was in Portland. And one of the things that Gyokoko, who is the abbot there, said is, we encourage people to laugh around here and even, you know, like, make jokes at our own expense, because if you have a good sense of humor, you can't possibly become a cult. And that's what, like, one of the interesting things where it's like, if you ever have something, it's like, if you're wondering if it's a cult or not, is do people have a sense of humor about it?
Right. That's a very good benchmark right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not the only either or, but it is definitely like, yeah, that's a good kind of, you know,
I can think of a few cults that did not have a very good sense of humor. One with the purple blanket.
Oh, yeah.
The Nikes. I'm pretty sure they.
Yes, yes. Yeah, bringing it back around. Yeah, the Heaven's Gate.
Mm.
And that was an interesting thing because it's like they had the uniform. The uniform was very specifically Nike shoes.
Yeah, right.
And, I was suggesting that Nike kind of, you know, do a sponsorship, you know, or, you know, have an ad campaign, especially with their ad slogan being "Just Do It." But
wait a minute, did you write to them in the Dear Mr. Mackin?
You know, I don't know if it was in Dear Mr. Mackin, but I did write to them.
I had a feeling they'd shut that shit down real quick, man. They're freaking Nike.
Nike also doesn't have a very good sense of humor.
Yeah, just do it. Just do it. It's like that guy from Whiplash. Do it. Do the fucking work. Yeah, I don't know. I watch motivational videos a lot, and that is always on there. That scene from the guy drumming, and he's like, do it. Do the fucking work. Yeah. I was going to ask if you watch motivational videos, but we don't need to go down that route. I don't know. So now it looks like a time. Rich, what do you use to motivate you throughout the day? No, I'm kidding. Let's go to a break real quick. We'll talk more with Rich Mackin. By the way, if you're listening and you want to get Rich's book, get it at the Oddball Magazine store on our shelf. It's right there, and you can know exactly what we're talking about because it's very funny. And I'm hoping that that link works, Rich. And that I could
actually,
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. Rich just confirmed that you can get his book on my site, at the Oddball Magazine bookshelf. So yeah, that's it. We'll be right back with Rich Mackin.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from the Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jp9productions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. It's Jason. We're back with Rich Mackin. But before we do that, we're going to talk about what's going on with Oddball Magazine. So this is what's going on with Oddball Magazine. So much that I had to write it down. So let's see. to start, today, Emma, today, Real Talk with Thomas Gagnon published his piece on the title Emma, which is, I read it. It's I didn't read the book or watch the movie, but it's Jane Austen, I believe. I'm going to have to read that again, but I read it and the review is very good. And after that, there is a review of Punk Science a review that I just wrote of the book Punk Science by Dr. Manier Samantha Lawton. I think that's how I pronounce her name. And it's really good. I mean, I really appreciated that book. A really interesting look into quantum theory and black holes and string theory and quantum relativity and all these kind of cool ideas, including metacognition and some of the cool things that you don't normally talk about in a science book. So I really enjoyed it. Hopefully, Dr. Manjeer will come on the podcast and talk more about punk science in the future. I think we're working on doing that right now. Then we had an essay by John Garman and photography by Jennifer Matthews. Jennifer Matthews has been a longtime contributor, and John Garman is also a great poet and essayist, been published in a bunch of journals, including Plowshares and other things as well. Secrets of Skinny People made me laugh yesterday when I watched it. When I clicked on it and looked at it, it was a very funny thing about social distancing, which, by the way, if you don't know, we are in this really weird pandemic of coronavirus, and it's kind of scary, but we're all going to get through it if we work on it together. Anyway, the social distancing thing was kind of a funny thing that Jeffrey did in The Secrets of Skinny People, as well as Bill Harvey coming through with the odds. Friday, if you want to keep current with with news, read Wise Words with Bruce Wise. I think this is one of the most interesting poetry columns I've ever been a part of. It's really cool. You just kind of have to really experience Bruce Wise's Wise Words. If you're into music, we have a feedback with Lizzie Von Teig and a movie review of Miss Americana, which I think is Taylor Swift. Not sure. But Lizzie is very sure that this movie review of Miss Americana is a great review. Great. Best review ever. Best review. Great review. Best review. And then we have our lovely Liza Zayas in the Underground Garden and her wonderful poem, Healing Confessions. We could go down the list. We have, you know, I said feedback with Lizzie, Underground Garden. And then we had a bunch of contributors. We had D.S. Malalai. We had Natalie Bradford, Justin Evanson, Ann Whitehouse, Alex Zelinas. The poem from Patricia Kerrigan was with Natalie Bradford. Also, Ira Joel Haber came through with that work with D.S. Malalai. And as I mentioned earlier, it was Jennifer Matthews. So that's some of the stuff that's going on right now on the website. But right now, really cool stuff with the Oddball Show. You know, stay tuned. In the next week, you'll hear a podcast from Oryx Cohen, OG peer support specialist and wonderful advocate, National Empowerment Center. The producer and one of the people featured in the movie Healing Voices, and some of his new projects. And we had a really cool conversation where it was the idea was, it's not your gene code, it's your zip code, was one of the things we were talking about, which I thought was pretty awesome. And then we also interviewed Michelle Hammer. We as in me interviewed Michelle, and I'm about to put that, look for that next. It's going to go Michelle, Oryx, and then, of course, we have this awesome podcast right now with Rich Mackin. Right now, we are working on new profits, nonprofit status for oddballmagazine.com. We have eight different contributors who are on the board now. I would love to talk more about that, and look out for Oddball Magazine. And also, if you are friends of Oddball Magazine on Facebook, that's where you'll catch all our updates. There's new tees at the store, new t-shirts, and a coffee cup, but there's one t-shirt that says Advocate, which I really like. There's another shirt that says, it's a picture of the Red Line, and it says Train of Thought on the back that I really like as well. And there's also a shirt for poets that says Poet. And there's also one that says Driven AF, which I haven't bought that one yet, but I will. And, of course, you know, you get the hoodie with Obi's face on it. So yeah, that's some of the stuff that's going on. There's so much more going on. You know, right now Oddball Magazine Presents is, we're trying to be creative about how we can host that. Maybe we'll, keep that going. We will keep that going online as a social media experiment, an open mic, scheduled on Monday, March 24th. It's going to be, we'll figure out how to do it. Maybe Zoom or something like that. I don't know, but, I will set that up, and Oddball Magazine Presents will be on that day. Other than that, I mean, that's kind of what's going on with oddballmagazine.com. As always, you can follow us at oddballmagazine.com. Check us out, if you're on Facebook, Friends of Oddball Magazine, Twitter at Oddball Magazine, and at Instagram at Oddball Magazine. Yeah, so that's kind of what's going on with Oddball Magazine. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Rich Mackin.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.
And that was what's going on with Oddball Magazine, and we're with Rich Mackin. We already started talking about Dear Mr. Mackin in the first segment. I thought maybe we could talk about 2020 and this year that it, well, not necessarily how fucked up this year is, but actually more like what projects you're working on. And if anything is changing because of how fucked up this year is, but if you are working on anything that you kind of want to talk about, so what are you doing now, Rich?
Yeah, well, it's been really wacky because it's like when you first asked me to do this interview, what I could tell you what my life was like has totally changed, as it has for a lot of people given the pandemic. But I'm one of the few people I know that I think I'm in a more secure situation financially and emotionally than most people, which and I'm laughing at myself. Hopefully people pick that up. I am not touting that my situation is better than others so much as my situation's been kind of chaotic for a while.
I mean, if we were to do a little background, I mean, when I talked to you, you had just, I was like, first of all, I met you, well, I've never met you before, Rich, but I saw that you were on Goodreads. And as you know, if you are on Goodreads, that means you like books. And I'm like, yes. I like books. Rich Mackin likes books. Okay. So anyway, I think I found you on Facebook. Anyway, I say, hey, Rich, my name is Jason Wright. I'm from The Oddball Show. Would you ever want to come on the podcast? This was like, oh, what, 2 months, 3 months ago?
Yes.
And you're like, yes, but I'm having surgery right now or something like that. Yes. And like, and that's not where you are. So that was 3 months ago. So that's a little background of where Rich is. But now, Rich, what's going on since then?
So what had happened is I had surgery to remove my sigmoid colon, which is the last foot of your colon before it goes into your anus and all of that part. And apparently that had been yucky and diseased for quite some time. So it's kind of interesting. So it took me a couple months to heal up from that. But now I'm like, oh, wait, my depression seems to, if not gone, is better than it ever was. And like, I'm just generally feeling like healthier and more alert and more energetic and everything. So I'm very glad I had it done. It was just kind of weird. It's like, it's the sort of thing that like, you never think, say like, you're lethargic and you're having depressive symptoms. You don't think maybe I should get a colonoscopy to see if anything's going on with that. But like, the more and more I read on the topic, that sounds like something like they're kind of moving to like the importance of gut health on your mental health and general well-being.
Exactly. Yes.
But at the time I was, going to, well, I'm still going to grad school at Wesleyan University. So that is a big thing. So in terms of like thinking of my life in the context of me being a writer, I'm going to, I'm taking grad classes at Wesleyan University, and focusing on, nonfiction literature, because it's funny, 'cause it's like, I'm the only person in my class who's already published 2 books. But at the same time, as I did, like, the books I wrote were so very specifically, like, here's this, you know, in a way, it's a novelty act. It's like, I'm proud of it. I think I did some great stuff with it. I'm not downplaying my skills as a writer or my intelligence, but it's definitely like, I was doing this novelty act with a certain tone and for a certain environment. And I'm like, wow, there's a bunch of stories I have and a bunch of things I'd like to do. And, I think it'd be worth brushing up my skills a bit to do that. So, but the funny thing is, like, we're halfway through Wesleyan spring break. So, like, when spring break started, it was going to be like, okay, and then in 2 Mondays, I'll be starting back class. And since then, the world's gone upside down, and everyone's doing virtual classes and everything like that. You know, pretty much all of the schools I know are shut down. But on top of that, I'm also in the weird position where a couple of things happen. My mom's 71, and without going into detail, she's having some, you know, rough issues that as people get older, there are. And so I am talking to you from the bedroom that I had as a child. And that's what I'm talking about. We were talking before about bookcases and books before the official podcast. You know, so I'm setting back up in the bedroom I grew up in, and I'm taking care of my mom, and I'm going to be telecommuting to Wesleyan University because I don't have to worry about the hour drive. And so in a weird way, it's like, so many things that are like drastically affecting everyone. Like, oh, for me, if anything, it makes it more convenient, you know, as convenient as anyone, or if anything, like more convenient. And, while I was doing a lot of creative projects, one of the things I was doing to make ends meet was I was using the Wesleyan van to take Wesleyan students to volunteer shifts. And with none of the students coming back, that job would have disappeared. But luckily, I had gotten offered a job incidentally in marketing, which is, go figure, after I worked in this thing making fun of marketing so much, what happened is, so many years ago, to jump back and forth in time, so I'm making fun of all these corporations, and eventually one of the higher-ups at The Truth, you know, so the people that do the anti-tobacco campaign, and this was back when they had first came out and they're like stacking body bags in front of Philip Morris's office and everything like that. And so they're like, oh, we should get this guy in. He's totally like doing like the same sort of like anti-corporate humor stuff that we would like to do. So they actually asked me to come work for them, and I worked for them for a while. So that's the funny thing. Like, so like my day job resume skills are all like in marketing now. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to work for a company that does anything I would be upset about. So lo and behold, a friend of mine, just as like the world was about to go upside down, a friend of mine asked if anyone with a certain set of skills needed a job. She works at a jewelry company. And so like, they're not like saving the world or anything, but like all their politics are in order. And their office is literally a 10-minute walk from my mom's house. And so it's like this fascinating thing, which is like, especially like we're in suburban Connecticut, so like no one walks to anything anywhere. So it's amazing. It's like, wow, it's like I'm in Norwalk, Connecticut, and I can walk to work, you know, and it's like, oh, well, that felt, you know, so that's like, you know, not necessarily my exciting, like creative stuff, but like, so like that's how my day-to-day life has changed.
in terms of creative, zine-y, anti-corporate outlooks and things, the last project I did working for was for a graphic novel that's coming out called Border X. I guess it, I don't know if graphic novel is, yeah, I don't know if that's the correct term, graphic novel, because it's an anthology. And it's being edited by a guy named Mauricio Cordero, who I knew through Mass College of Art, where I went to art school. And it's a collection of stories about the border crisis and about the people involved with the border crisis and how all of these things came to pass. And so what he asked me to do was to talk about, Boston and Standard Fruit and Dole Fruit and, United Fruit Company, which became Chiquita. And so, if you go, you'll get up to a dozen names, but it's basically the two companies that are now Dole and Chiquita and all of the effects that they had in Central America. And it becomes really weird to the point of not being believable if you read it all in one lump of all of the atrocities that these companies have committed. But it's all there in normal history. You don't have to get some weird conspiracy site. And even United Fruit Company's website will reference politics that they no longer practice, but of course they don't, really bring it up. But so much of in the 50s and 60s until to, kind of even to the 90s and to some extent still today, a lot of Central America was owned, the landowners all wound up being bought out by Chiquita, or at some point United Fruit, but now Chiquita, and they just treated everyone horribly. And then, Dole wasn't as bad before, but then Dole wound up doing a lot of things with chemicals. They even, Dow Chemical had a pesticide that turned out to be carcinogenic and have a lot of problems and cause sterility. And Dow made a point, and Dow's not a great company. They're a pretty nasty company, in my opinion. But they even did we can't sell this anymore. And Chiquita's if you can't sell it, Dole Bananas said, if you're not going to sell it in the United States, can we buy it and use it in Central America? And Dow even did we'll sell it to you under the condition, and they got it in writing, that you can't sue us because we told you this is dangerous. So if you're going to use it as your own risk. And then they used it, and all of their workers became sterile. In Costa Rica, every Dole fruit worker, has been diagnosed as sterile. And it's in terms of United Fruit, a lot of the things when you hear about people in Honduras coming, coming to America because they're being forced out and they're scared of all these paramilitary groups. A lot of these paramilitary groups were funded in part by United Fruit, Chiquita. And there's even a thing where a former CEO of Chiquita killed himself because they got caught. And I think the number was $250 million that they were giving to these paramilitary groups. And so there's just so much stuff that it's a great deal of our, our economy is based on fruit companies that are, these huge companies based in the United States that are devastating Central America. And so I did this, if I had the time, and I might go back and do this, you could probably do a 24-page illustrated, comic book on its own of just all of the characters and what they're doing and all of the details, just because even the story of how Bananas got to this continent is pretty, weird and roundabout. It's not as evil, but yeah, so I wound up doing a 6-page just to kind of get all the high points and how it affects the border crisis. But, that was the last official creative sort of activity I did. So it's a lot drier, the topic was such that I didn't think being whimsical was really appropriate in any way, as you could understand.
Right.
Yeah, but it's
important, and you're shedding light on things that are, mm-hmm. that need to be said, right?
Right.
And you're doing it in a creative way, which is pretty cool. Are you the graphic designer? Are you the artist or the writer for that?
Yeah. Well, for that piece, I did all the research, wrote, and illustrated myself. So it's one of the few situations where I'm actually going back and using my art degree.
Wow. Cool. That's really cool. So you use your art degree and you're basically creating a comic strip.
Yeah.
But is it online and is it widely available or is it kind of hard to
it's find, still it's still being worked out. If you go to border, so the the word border with a hyphen x.com.
Nice.
So it's border x. And so it's currently being put into production, and so you can advance order it, which I recommend people do. Give some sneak previews to a lot of the artwork. It's a pretty interesting and diverse group of people. Like some of them, it's one of those things where some people are comic book artists, some people are activists. There's a lot of things that are sworn testimony by people who are actually imprisoned at the border or have, immigrated to the United States.
Man, I would love to get someone to review that for Oddball if you are ever up for that. We've been doing a lot more book reviews, so we'll talk after show, man. Maybe I can get a hold of that. Whether I have to purchase it and then whenever it's out, and we'll do a book review. But yeah, that just sounds so interesting. It's like a collaboration of poets and advocates and artists and stuff, or is it just kind of like a what do they call it, like an anthology or something, or what?
Yeah, it's an anthology of. I'm not even too sure how many people. It's what of like so many other things. It's like here's what everything was going. Here's where everything was going, and then lo and behold, the entire economy got turned around. So I'm not. Yeah. Not too sure where situation.
Like if we were to talk about right now, currently everything's kind of up in the air. We're just trying to figure out what we're all doing. And what is it, March? Rich, what is today? March? Oh, it's top of St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah,
it's St. Patrick's Day.
Yes,
and I'm hoping we're gonna have corned beef and cabbage after this. I love it, but it's such a weird day, man. I mean,
yeah.
The places are closed down, and no one's going anywhere, and we're trying to flatten the curve of this weird virus thing that's going on, So everything is kind of up in the air, but it doesn't mean that it won't get better. I'm hoping, but if it does get better, and this is a past kind of thing. Then, hopefully we will be able to start doing live events again and start doing, Oddball Magazine, a nonprofit, and you can do Border X and everything. I think that one of the points is, we just kind of have to keep on doing it, right? I mean, dude, think about it, Rich. You were doing zines before it was even a thing, right? And I've been doing Oddball Magazine since 1995, right? So I've been kind of underneath, I've been not known for a long time, so I can keep on being not known for longer. And I've been literally doing Oddball Magazine since 1995, and then we came online in 2010. So, it's not like people are running down our doors to give us money to be the next nonprofit. But whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're still artists, we're still writers, we're still doing shit. I hope if anything, Rich, you go ahead. Yeah.
Cereal, and then I drive somewhere between 2 and 8 hours. And then wherever I'm performing will either pay for my dinner or make me dinner or like comp me dinner or something. So those are the two meals I eat. And then I do a show, and I would sell enough zines to like pay for, you know, like I would get enough money from the event to like pay for my gas, and then like enough money from zines to pay for my other expenses, and then trade enough zines that I was getting other like books and, you know, cool stuff. And then like once a week I might do like a college show where that was like actually $200. So that's where like the, oh, okay, this is what my income is. And they're like, oh, well, like, well, what about video games? I'm like, I don't have video games. It's like, I don't even really live anywhere right now, you know? So like, depending on how it's like, hi, I'm a professional author and I tour the United States having amazing adventures, or I'm a homeless guy living out of my car, you know, and it's like, and both are true. And it's like right. A lot of what kind of works is, and it's funny how like spiritual things, like, you know, like you tie in, then you start reverse engineering, like, oh yeah, I get it. Where it's like in nonviolent communication, they talk about how it's many people confuse their needs for what the, you know, the strategy they use to meet the need. And so like the big thing is that like technically nobody needs money. It's you need things that you buy with the money, you know? So it's like, you need to live somewhere, right? You need a shelter. So the most common way to have a shelter is to go to a job where you make money and you use the money to pay your rent or buy your house, but you don't have to do that. And so what happens is you start like when you get into the mindset of like, okay, well, how do I meet my needs without necessarily having to have money? And like, how can I trade things, or how can I simplify things, or how could I do this, or how could I do that? You know, and so like in a weird situation like this where like everyone else is, you know, so many people I know are like just trying to figure this out for the first time versus a lot of us are like, oh, yeah, I'm used to, you know, like how to do this and how to do that. It's like I've already bought like a. You know, like I know some people that's like, I know how to make my own chicken broth, and I have a, you know, 10-pound bag of rice and a 10-pound bag of beans. So if need be, I'll be eating, you know, rice and beans for the next couple of months, you know. And it's one of those things where it's like, that's not what you want to do. But like there's something comforting about the idea of like, oh, I know how this works. You know, it's like, you know, in a way it's like, oh, okay, well, I have a 6-foot-tall bookshelf, you know, filled with books that mostly I haven't read yet, and I know how to eat simply and do simpler things. You know, this is, you know, it's horrible, but there's a way to like cope with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
That's a really, really good point. I'm like getting an echo. That sucks. Why am I getting an echo? Oh, it's gone. So. What you're talking about, Rich, is you're talking about a good point, right? Mm. The point is that what you're talking about, like the basics, right? There's a thing in mental health, right? Because I work as a certified PS specialist. So I learn a lot about mental health. And one of the things is the 8 dimensions of wellness, right? And the 8 dimensions of wellness are basically, you know, you have your housing, you have your emotional, you have your physical, you have your spiritual, you have your financial, you have your work, you have whatever. You have 8 dimensions of wellness, right? And I know this sounds like woo, you know, but basic fundamentals. If you have 8 things, there's 8 dimensions of wellness, and if you can cover at least 5 of them, you can live a decent life. Okay, so like you might not like, so maybe you don't have like financial. Well, you know, maybe you have a nice relationship, or maybe you have a roof over your head, or clothes on your back, or maybe you have some food in your fridge. You know what I mean? These like little things. And then you start to practice gratitude on those kind of things. And then like, you actually like, hold on, if it was raining right now, I have a roof over my head. You know, I might not have $1 million, but I have enough money. And I actually have toilet paper, which is nice. Who never thought that would be a fucking thing. People would have to talk about that. But like, you know, you have a few things. And dude, look, if this was bad, right? Can you imagine if we had to like, we had to write zines, like, you know, back at like, in, you know, to communicate, you know, we're talking, I don't know where you are right now, dude, but I'm talking in my, you know, in my basement, to you, and I don't know where you are, but I believe you are putting books on a bookshelf in a whole different place, and we are doing that right now over the magic of the internet. You know, I could text message you, and you could text message me like, "Yo, calm down," and then you know what I mean. So it's amazing how quickly connected we all are still, even though we're not, right? But honestly, dude, I have been really I've one of my parts of my mental health issues is social anxiety. Now I kind of cut that out. I don't really have that anymore. It's not like I'm not trying to I'm not trying to shine a turd, right? Like, this is a shitty situation, but I'm trying to look at it in a different light. Like, there are some good things. I'm an avid reader. I love projects. There's some shit that we can still do. You know what I mean? And writers, we haven't, dude, think about how often we've been writing before when no one noticed anyway. So let's keep on writing. Let's keep on making art. And now hopefully more people will, now more than ever, people need creativity. Yeah. To get through this kind of stuff.
And it's funny because I'm seeing a lot of things of how clean a lot of places suddenly are becoming because there's not the traffic. So some of the advantages of traveling or just going camping is just to disrupt your life so much that you realize, oh, I don't have to do this. And there's a lot of things it's funny, I've lived in a Buddhist temple, so people are like, oh, so you must have a really, simple, minimized life. I'm like, no, I have a ridiculously overcomplicated life because I choose to. I don't need to have a pirate outfit. I dress up like a pirate sometimes because it's fun. But it's also I'm very aware of what I'm doing because I choose to do it, even though it's more difficult than needs to be versus what I actually need. And I think this might be an interesting thing where a lot of people might start wait a minute, I went without this and I don't miss it anymore. Or I had to do something a different way. And, and sometimes it's you go back and you actually have a new appreciation for something you were doing. You don't change anything, but you're oh wow. Yeah. This is actually really great. I don't want to be too, because a lot of people are going to literally suffer and people are going to die. So I don't want, I don't want to be oh, well, it's not affecting me. And so everything's fine. Cause again, a couple weird things happen to fall into my lap that I'm actually doing pretty good. And I have an office that it's literally me and one other guy for the most part. And we've divided who's going into the office when. And so we're not going to be in the office at the time. So I literally, it's funny, I'm not telecommuting, but I'm walking 10 minutes going into an office that no one's in. And then I wipe everything down and then he comes in, So it's so I'm in a great situation, but but there's also for the crap and the hardship, there's some interesting things and lessons to be learned.
Yeah. Exactly. And one of the cool things is you get fresh air right there, go out there, go and get out there and do fresh air. One of the cool things about my gig as a certified peer specialist is that we're calling people, checking in, how you doing, what is this like for you, trying to be creative with I had a writer's workshop today that went really well, that was really fun. We did it completely remotely and that was cool. So, just be creative, I guess. Right. This is not going to go forever. I'm thinking this is temporary.
I'm amazed by some of the resilience that I've been seeing. Dropkick Murphys are oh, we can't do a concert. Okay. We'll just go online. So I've been seeing a bunch of things. It's oh, hey, our meeting has been changed to, we're going to, we're going to do an online thing. And it's just, so it's amazing. You're saying the ability for people to okay, here's what we can do to make do. And it's
And again, it's very much the silver lining. Like, there's definitely a big cloud over our heads, but it's, I'm excited to see what some of the things that might come out of this, where, you know, people are like, oh, and here's what I learned, because I, you know, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, we fucking adapt, dude. We seriously do. You know, like, as I said, as writers have been social outcasts for a long time, and I mean, at least I have been, and I'm not saying that, like, it's a good thing, but at least I'm used to, you know, being able to deal with this stuff. This is like some huge trauma, and like being trauma informed and being used to some really hard shit that I've had to deal with. And the fact that, like, thank God, like, I'm finally, like, my meds are finally good. You know, I'm glad about that. You know, so, you know, I'm kind of equipped to go through this. But, you know, hey, so we're coming down to the end of the hour. Rich, I want to thank you for being on the show. You know, I don't know how much time you have. Do you have time for a quick game, or do you got to go?
Yeah, quick game.
Quick game. Okay, quick game. Okay, here's the quick game.
Okay.
All right, so we're ending down to the end of the hour. Here's the thing. All right. I'm going to ask you either do you want to do – favorites, a list of 10, or how well do you know your podcaster, or let's talk quantum physics?
I'd say favorites.
Favorites. Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. Five questions. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite book?
My favorite. Oh, geez. I would have to say, and it's hard to measure, but I would have to say Sit Down and Shut Up, which is a Zen Buddhist book by an author named Brad Warner. And I honestly don't know. I might have books I like better, but I taught that book in a class at the temple I lived in. So that's a pretty decent, I think, metric. They're like, yeah, I guess I like that book.
Nice. Yeah. Sit Down and Shut Up by Brad Warner. I've actually read that book. That's pretty cool. Did I get his name right? Brad Warner. It's like a red book with the Buddhist on it, with the Buddha on it. Yeah. Okay. Two. What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie. Same sort of thing. I would have to, the actual algorithm, the metric would be, that I saw it 10 times in theaters. So that would be Mad Max Fury Road.
No shit. Fury Road. What? I don't think anyone's ever said that before in their life.
Was really?
Yeah. Was it that good?
I saw it twice opening weekend. Now, to put some context, I live somewhere where there's a lot of second run theaters where you could go see a movie for $2 and then get a pint of beer and a popcorn for an extra $5. So that's a different commitment than like going somewhere where like a movie is $12 a ticket. But yeah, I would have to say Fury Road. You could argue with me that there's movies with better artistic merit, perhaps. And I don't know if it's, you know, like, if we're talking like movies that changed my life, but in terms of just like movies that I kept going back and watching again, Fury Road.
All right. I'm going to check that out. I don't know. I'm hoping it's available on Netflix or something. All right. Let's see. How about favorite genre of music?
Have to go to punk.
Right.
Although I tend to, you know, it's I've been into punk rock since I was 15, but I find that what I always listen to is punk, either like other kinds of music done by punks or like some sort of twist. So like bands like Piñata Protest, which is a Mexican punk band, and Turtle Island, that is a Japanese punk band that has a taiko drum section, or World Inferno Friendship Society from Brooklyn, who are like kind of like punk ideas, but almost like a, like, think of musical theater sort of genre.
Oh, that band sounded awesome. What was that? World of what?
The World Inferno Friendship Society.
Oh man, totally gonna Google that shit. World Inferno Friendship Society.
Yeah.
All right. So that's three. So far, your favorite book is Sit Down and Shut Up. Your favorite movie is Fury Road. Your favorite genre of music is punk rock. Your favorite band
I would probably say World Inferno Friendship Society. Just in terms of like,
all right.
I think that the most times, if you think of, I'll say the metric definitely like the furthest I've traveled to see a band is definitely World Inferno Friendship Society. And I think I've seen them, if not more, I think I've seen them more than any band that isn't just a local band. You know, like when you have like your friend's band, like, you know, you go to see them more. But I would say World Inferno is probably my favorite band.
All right. And last question, would you like to shout out anybody? Favorite people? Anyone you want to say hi to?
Favorite people? I would say, I like so many people. I think one of the people, like, I have a friend and contemporary, but he's also kind of a hero of mine, who is Jonica Stuckey, who I've gone on tours with, and he is quite the acclaimed poet, especially now. He went to Emerson College shortly after I went to Mass Art, and he co-founded a group called the Guerrilla Poets with a guy named Matt, and they would do poetry readings places that you don't expect poetry readings, like Burger King. And things like that. So you can see how I'd appreciate that. And he won the National Head-to-Head Haiku Championship. And he recently put out a book-length poem called Arise, Arise. That's pretty impressive. Kind of like, it's kind of like the modern-day Howl. You know, and of course, like any, like it kind of cheapens anything when you say something like that. But it's like, you know, sometimes you have to, like, if you just say it's a long poem, it, you know, that doesn't do anything. So. But yeah, and he's just all around great guy. So I don't know if he's the favorite person in my life, but he's just like a good instant comes to mind.
Hey man, thanks for shouting him out. I'm sure he really appreciates that.
Go Jonica. He's in Boston. He's doing some cool stuff.
Cool. Arise, Arise, man. Check that out.
Yeah.
Hey Rich, it was really great to have you on the show.
Hey.
I do hope that we keep in touch. I hope that you stay cool during all this craziness and keep writing and all that good stuff.
Okay, cool. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to check out Rich Mackin, you can catch him at the Oddball Bookshelf. Dear Mr. Mackin, and also you have Border X and all those cool things that he's doing. So there's a lot of cool stuff that he's doing right now. And Rich, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot.
And I wanted to close off, as I always do, with a Jagged Thought. And I'll come back with that because I know Rich has got to go. So I'll come back and I'll finish off with a Jagged Thought. We'll talk soon.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.
All right, and we're back. So that was really cool to have Rich Mackin on the show. Very cool guy. Learned a lot about him and his work at, you know, Dear Mr. Mackin and Border X and a lot of cool stuff about him. And I really love the fact that I have a podcast like this so I can meet all these really interesting people. So I wanted to close off with a Jagged Thought. The Jagged Thought is from my last Jagged Thought, Jagged Thought 312. The poem is called Poems and Pens. Everybody, I know it's a really weird time right now, and I know that, like, a lot of people are struggling. Just, we're going to get through it. This is going to get better, you know, day by day. This is going to get better. So let's keep it going. Let's keep writing. Writers unite. Keep writing. Keep doing your thing. And I'll see you real soon. So this is Jagged Thought 312, Poems and Pens. Imagine me 20 years old. almost 20 years ago. Look at all the poems that have come from that pain. Look at all the scars that I can relive on each page. Every scribbled inch of ink must have been for something. As those full moon evenings, that slow, lethargic, manic writing, legs twitching, hands shaking, mind not stopping to take a break, only medicine to put me to sleep, pills to make me feel awake, the eventual break that comes after each descending dip, each morning a far night without sleep, that quick thinking, nonlinear rotation, synapses firing, calm the baby with medication, slow the poet down with something to make the pen stop, and sit down, calm down, rest for now, watch the clock. That was for something, right? I'm a writer. And it's so exciting to be living. Not every day is perfect, baby, far from it, but it's a staircase that I'm climbing to my own personal island. Maybe there's fight inside me, left to spring loose like baby teeth, maybe. Maybe I'll just bleed ink if you cut me. Maybe I'll bleed out in rhythm, the blood of a poet, a writer, a loose-leaf writer. And today we talk of hope, right? Everyone talks the word down like a science, like we just know what it is. Like Brandy said, it's ingrained in us. Hope. Hope got me out of that medicinal farm. Hope came and woke me up, folded my clothes, put them in the hospital bag with a wrist tag, signed me out. You want to talk hope? Knowing that you will one day get out, that's hope. Knowing the life where maybe you'll see ghosts of the poems you wrote in bookstores, that's hope. Finding a reason for the goddamn thinking, knowing you have to wake up only to begin again, that's hope. Because there has to be some reason, right? It's not all for nothing, right? Maybe I do have hope. I have hope for the ones I've lost who left me lost in thought, come back into my life. Say, it's all right. You can come back. Say hi. I made it. I'm doing fine. Let's get coffee and you can show me pictures of your family life. You were, they were, we were, they were. My, know you're everything because we aren't all alone in this longing. They were your shining light in the darkest night. Maybe they left you because the train of thought got too dark deep in the clouds. Maybe they mistook your thoughts for proud. Maybe those thoughts got so loud they started speaking tongues to calm you down. And that was then, but now is now. Hey, if that's you, then you are just like me. And I still take the medicine, just a different prescription. You just never knew me back then. Who knows? We might have been friends. But my pen is glistening with another 100,000 words just like this one. Each poem written on loose leaf, scratched pencil marks, could have been scars, could have been holes in my lungs, could have been broken bones, could have been, just became poems. Poems and pens. That's all life is. Poems and pens, brushes and palettes, films and lens, strings and musicians. The heartbeat is a drum beat. It's all repetition. Mathematics, really, if you want to get deep about it. It's all math and statistics and heartbreak and morticians and birthdays and weddings. Just black stars in the bright night. That's all we are. That's all what that life is, if you want to get deep about it. And that was Jagged Thought, 312, Poems and Pens. And this has been the Oddball Show. Thanks again to my guest, Rich Mackin from the book, Dear Mr. Mackin, a really cool person to have on my show. Thank you for being on it. We'll talk real soon to all of those people who are listening right now. I hope in the future when you hear this, things are better, not worse. And if they are worse, we'll get through it. All right. Take care, guys. We'll see you real soon. Be good to each other. Writers Unite. Peace.
This is the Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration from JP Lab Productions and Oddball Magazine.
Hey there, all you mammals and Martians. This is Prof from The Oddball Show. If you've been tuning into our preposterous podcast and like what you've been hearing, why not pop over to iTunes and leave us a review? iTunes not your thing? Well, then come on over and follow us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Buzzsprout. Learn more about who we are at oddballmagazine.com and jplineproductions.com. Link up with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us a tasteful yet inspiring postcard, or just give us a holler in your nearest CB radio, good buddy. On behalf of Jason Wright and myself, thanks for listening to The Oddball Show, and stay tuned.